Bird, iceberg, you're such an iceberg. Let's make an iceberg tree. Scrape in the ice to fill the cup. Then add the flavor, eat it up. Yum, 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 yum. How about another one? Icebird, you're a lot of fun.
Icebird, with five flavor packets. Icebird, new from Kenner.
How do you do? For some people, change happens gradually. For others, it can be cataclysmic with overnight effects that baffle family and friends. And so it was with the young man in our story. Almost overnight, he became a sensation as a rapper with growing fame. And this ultimately led to a different kind of change, one that made everyone ask, what in the world happened to you?
Hello, this is Robert Berry, and welcome to Retro Crush, the podcast, episode 17. Hope you're doing well today. Wow, this is our 17th episode, and according to music, there's many things that await us here. Kip Winger will now officially have a crush on us. Remember that song, 17? It was like, she's only 17. Daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me. And I think you had the Stray Cats with Sexy and 17, and Rick James had one called She Was Only 17, But She Was Sexy. But Chuck Berry kicked it up a notch and had one about Sweet Little 16. And, of course, there was those daycare love songs that Michael Jackson wrote as well. But a long history of statutory rape in rock music there with those songs about 17-year-olds. So please, stay away from us for another episode until we're officially 18. I know we may look alluring, but in the meantime, I guess we can get on with our show, because this fabulous introduction's just really going places here. Hey, today we're going to go over some interesting old TV theme songs. Maybe some shows you've never heard of, or maybe shows you haven't thought of in quite a while, but they're pretty obscure. They're shows that may never even see the light of DVD because of that, but we'll play them for you nonetheless. The first show theme song is really funny, and it's kind of corny. It's a show from 1960 called Diver Dan. And if you ever have a chance to find a bootleg video of this show, or maybe even an official release someday, you really should check it out. It's a show about a guy who was a deep sea diver, and he had several friends under the sea. A mermaid, which is this live-action mermaid played by Suzanne Turner. Her name was Miss Minerva, and all these like crazy puppet fish that would just hang around, and it was this really funny underwater looking set where things were just pulled around with strings to simulate the current, and you know, kind of a dorky local show feel to it, but totally worth checking out just for the kitsch value if you ever get a chance. But here's the theme to Diver Dan.
Below in the sea, there's adventure and danger. That's where you'll find Diver Dan. The sights that he sees are surprising and stranger than ever you'll see on the land. He moves among creatures of frightening features, flashing teeth, flashing jaws, flapping fins, snapping claws. He protects and he saves his friends under the waves. That's where you'll find Diver Dan.
He protects and he saves his friends under the waves. That's where you'll find Diver Dan. Of course, the picture I'm looking at right now, he's holding a big spear gun, so I don't know how much he totally protects and saves those sea creatures there. If you want to read more about Diver Dan, you should go to a website called PlanetXMagazine.com, and it's probably a link right on the front page there, but he's got a fun 8-page article about the show where he interviews the Sun's creator, a guy named Scott Moon, a local Sacramentan here, and check it out. It's PlanetXMagazine.com. Now, when I was a kid, I was so enamored of King Kong. I wrote my own King Kong books. I thought the movie was just incredible. In fact, I remember my mom made us save some of our allowance in a jar so we can buy something bigger with it someday. Teach us the value of savings. And I had about $8 or $9 put in a jar. And we went to the bookstore, and I used this money to buy a big Making of King Kong book. And it was the making of the original King Kong series as well. And again, we're talking like 1975, 76. King Kong was becoming very popular again. And they made that Dino De Laurentiis remake where King Kong's on the World Trade Center. But syndicated at the same time was this 1966 cartoon made by Rankin Bass, who made all those outstanding Christmas specials. It was a King Kong cartoon. I believe it was animated in Japan and brought over here. And this just took the King Kong concept to a just ridiculously stupid level. The setups that there's this family that's vacationing of scientists checking out this island, and this little 5-year-old boy, I think his name was Bobby, ends up hooking up with King Kong, and they become fast friends, and King Kong helps him out. And the song's kind of catchy. I'll let you hear it right now, and we'll talk about it in a bit more. So according to that song, King Kong's approximately 60 feet tall. And I remember reading in a book somewhere that he was 40 feet tall in my Making of Kong book, so I remember hearing this theme song really created quite a dilemma for me. Forget the other continuity problems that this cartoon had, like he's suddenly alive again and back on Skull Island. But it was watchable. Again, I'd watch about any show at that age, but very disappointing that King Kong wasn't actually mean and roaming through the city and eating people. Another incredibly disappointing cartoon a little bit later in the 70s was called Godzilla. And you'd think, wow, a cartoon about Godzilla, how could that not be cool? I had comic books of Godzilla that Marvel Comics did at the time. I loved watching the goofy Godzilla movies. But this cartoon just totally missed the boat. The intro for it is actually pretty cool. You know, it's talking about how he's up from the desk and he's, you know, 10 stories tall or 20 stories tall, something like that. And then they introduce this character called Godzuki. You know, as if a kid just, you know, just like with the Kong cartoon, it's like, you know, why can't they understand that kids just want to see the scary monsters and they don't need to have some stupid little kid sidekick to make it more watchable? I mean, it's like, you know, to convince a boy that watching Godzilla is going to be boring, so you have to throw a little kid in the mix to make it more fun. Well, they didn't quite have a little kid. With the Godzilla cartoon, it was a little mini Godzilla called Godzuki. And you know, they didn't even use the son of Godzilla that was in the movies. It was this like dorky little lizard that would giggle up. And these goofy animal sidekicks were just everywhere in cartoons. I mean, the Super Friends had this monkey named Gleek, Space Ghost had Blip, and just you know, all these little dumb dog sidekicks. I think you can blame Scooby-Doo for starting that craze. But anyway, here's the theme for the 1978 Godzilla cartoon.
Up from the depths, 30 stories high.
Three,
I love how that theme sounds so ominous and powerful, and then like 20 seconds into it becomes like the gayest TV theme song for a cartoon ever, with the wacky little honks and tweets and the Godzuki theme there, but just horrible. This cartoon, which was made by Hanna-Barbera Studios, again in the late 70s, it got retrofitted in so many ways. There was, first it was just called Godzilla, and then they had a show called the Godzilla Power Hour, where they partnered Godzilla with some jungle cartoon. I think it was Janna the Jungle or something along those lines. They had Godzilla in the Super 90. It was called the Godzilla Globetrotters Adventure Hour, because, you know, you had to pair Godzilla with the Harlem Globetrotters. They had the Godzilla Dynamite Hour with the Funky Phantom, and the Godzilla Hong Kong Fooey Hour. Hanna-Barbera used to just repackage existing shows into special hour packages and pass them off like they were something new. Just really horrible, horrible cartoon, and pretty insulting to the legacy of Godzilla there. Yeah, another real awful cartoon that took a existing property and went too far with it was the Brady Kids. You know, aside from the original Brady Bunch show, which is still one of my favorite shows, every subsequent attempt to make a new version of this show has just failed miserably, in my opinion. I mean, you had that awful Brady Kid, the Brady Brides, where Jan and Marcia got married and have to share a house together because they individually couldn't afford to buy their own house with their new husbands there. And they had the Brady Bunch Variety Hour, that new Brady series they did that was just awful, and somewhere in the middle of all that, they had the Brady Kids cartoon. I think this came out around 72, and just horrible. Filmation put this show out, and Filmation was pretty much known for doing some of the worst animation of the time, just these barely animated things that they could pass off as cartoons. They would recycle the animation like crazy. You'd see the same scenes repeated throughout the whole show. And the show is just really, really stupid. Somehow the concept was that the Brady Kids, the three boys and the girls, were now living in a tree house, even though they were their same age. The parents were nowhere to be found, and with no visible source of income, these kids would live in this tree house and go off on adventures every day. But of course, that wasn't exciting enough. They had a magical talking bird named Marlin that hung with them. A dog called Mop Top. Apparently they couldn't use Tiger anymore, so he was this big puffy white dog. And then they also had two Japanese talking panda bears named Ping and Pong. I guess they were Chinese, but when I interviewed Sherwood Schwartz back in 2003, I asked what he thought of the Brady Kids cartoon, and he replied, "I was not satisfied with the animated Brady thing. My conversation was to give a new platform that was more imaginative than real-life situations, but I didn't find it particularly good, so we stopped it after a year." This cartoon, if you ever get a chance to stumble on it, it's kind of worth seeing just because of some of the bizarre special episodes they have. They had some episodes where Superman paid them a visit. There was a Wonder Woman episode. And there was a couple funny supporting characters they introduced. A guy named Chuck that was just like a big dumb jock kind of a guy. And this total hippie dude named Fleetwood, which you could tell they were trying to do like their version of Scooby-Doo Shaggy, but he had like this big blonde afro and would be walking around saying real crazy things, like, you know, just crazy man and stuff like that. But anyway, here is the theme song to the Brady Kids cartoon.
Meet three sisters.
Now meet the brothers. Ray's the leader and the good man for the job.
There's another boy by the name of Peter.
The youngest one is Bob.
Let me interrupt here really quick. You'll notice this actually has the real Brady Bunch doing the voices for their cartoons, so they were kind of desperate for work at this point because the show was no longer on. And every Brady kid from the show actually provided the voice of their character in the cartoon. But there was a point where Barry Williams just left the show, and so if you watch some of the later episodes, there's suddenly this weirder, deeper-voiced guy doing Greg's voice that was kind of alarming. So, anyway, I'm sorry. Back to the theme.
We are sisters. Now they're all quite pretty.
First there's Marcia with her eyes as sparkling blue.
Then there's Jen, the middle one, who's really groovy.
And sister Cindy, too.
Let's get back now for action and adventure.
As we see things we never saw before.
We'll meet Marcia, Fencing, and Bong the Panda. And Marlin, who has voices by the score.
The Brady Kids, the Brady Kids. It's the world of your friends, the Brady Kids.
Of course, the Brady Bunch wasn't the only show that was guilty of taking their core concept and warping it beyond recognition in a cartoon, because the Partridge Family did the same thing, where it was called the Partridge Family in the year 2000-something or other. It was like in the future. It was pretty much just a ripoff of the Jetsons, but with the Partridge Family inexplicably now in the year 3000. So that's another one that's worth checking out. We'll try to dig up the theme for that one. It's not as exciting to listen to, or it doesn't have much of a catchy tune to it, but another show where the original cast members did all the voices for the cartoon, and just truly, truly awful. So Kurt Vonnegut's got this new book out called Man Without a Country, and he's been on Bill Maher's show and The Daily Show making appearances, and I guess these appearances have generated enough interest in his book that he's actually got a bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list, which is just amazing. So I want to get this book. It's a collection of nonfiction essays that he's done, and I go to Borders Books, and I look around at the new nonfiction and all around, and I can't find this book anywhere. And so I go to the information desk, and I ask the lady, hey, do you guys have Kurt Vonnegut's book in? And she looks in her computer, and she says, well, there might be one or two copies left, according to here. So she's looking around and just can't find it, and ultimately, they don't have any copies of it in. Just 1 week after it's released, and they don't have anything of this book. And I was just like flabbergasted. I said, how could you guys have 20 copies of Pamela Anderson's new book and have none of the latest from Kurt Vonnegut? And she says, well, you know, it's just supply and demand. People don't want the Pamela Anderson book. And I just said, well, then why'd you order so many of them? I mean, come on, you're a bookstore. I mean, who wants to read a fiction adventure written by Pamela Anderson? It just bothers me. It's the same mentality when you want to rent some great new movie that's maybe got a little bit of a cult following at Blockbuster, and you can't find it, but you see like 500 copies of Daddy Daycare with Eddie Murphy there. It's just a crime. And it shows you how out of touch that these bookstores are becoming, because their answer was that, well, since the Vonnegut book was out, they could special order it for me and then let me know when it comes in and I can come and pick it up. And I just said, well, gosh, I mean, I might as well just order it from Amazon and maybe have it even shipped to my house for free and for cheaper and with no sales tax. And you know, it's just amazing. I think some of these bookstores need to get their act together a little bit more so they can survive. I know a lot of the record stores are just folding right and left, and they're blaming the illegal piracy, but I think a lot of it's just because people don't like to go and shop for CDs in person anymore. I mean, you can read about them online, you can check out the CD, sample them on Amazon even, and just make your purchases there. I mean, I really like to support the local stores that are actually here physically when I can, but it's, you know, experiences like that end up being pretty frustrating. By the way, apologies to anybody who did not enjoy episode 16. That was recorded at a party with a portable recorder here, and you know, I think I just had a couple of theme songs and then the recording of the taste test of the Jones Candy Soda with a bunch of drunken madness that followed, and that was it. I ended up coming home with the recording of that, and I didn't want to wake anybody in the house up, so I just used all pre-existing recordings. I don't think there's any live introduction to that at all, but just something fun and different. Hope some of you liked it at least. We're going to end the show today with a good TV theme song to kind of cleanse the palate of some of these awful ones that you had to hear. It's for the show Land of the Lost from Sid and Marty Krofft, and I really enjoy it, and it's another fun theme that tells the story of everything and has some great dinosaur growling at the end of it. until probably a new episode coming on Wednesday. Talk to you then.
Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition met the greatest earthquake ever known. High on the rapid, it struck their tiny raft. Plunged them down 1,000 feet below to the land of the lost. To the land of the lost.